This is November 6th, 2016, 2 days before the election, and I will be talking about voting today. I cannot not talk about what I see as such a hugely important election. And I'm going to address the reasons that people may give themselves for not voting. So besides just laziness or not finding the time on Tuesday to vote, all of this is based on the idea that you would have registered to vote. You need to have registered in order to vote. My own experience in voting, which I never miss, I always vote every 2 years or whenever there's an election, is that it's very quick. Maybe this year it'll be less so. The turnout is forecast to be higher than usual, higher than the usual pathetically low turnout. It doesn't really take much time to cast your votes in this election, any election. I tried to imagine what reasons people would give for not voting, just letting it go. And the first one I came up with is based on just logic, sort of mathematical logic. And it would sort of go like this. My vote would be only one of millions, so what difference could it make? This idea, and that's what it is, it's an idea, is at odds with one of the fundamental points of Buddhism and of the experience of awakening, which is that every single one of us is the whole. That's not logical. It's not rational. How can each one of us, every single one of us, be the whole? But it's true. There's this, I think, excellent analogy of this principle, what we could call the radical sovereignty of the self, self with a capital S, and that is the hologram. What little I've read about the hologram says that every fragment of a hologram is the whole. And this is the way things really are. Each one of us is not just part of the whole, but is the whole. This is what the Buddha meant when he this is the myth, one of the many myths in Buddhism, about how the newborn Buddha took 7 steps. He's very precocious in terms of walking. He took 7 steps and raised one hand pointing to the heavens and one hand pointing to the earth, and he said, "Above the heavens and below the heavens, I alone, the world honored one." I alone. Now, to some people, this might sound like it's bragging, boasting, egocentric. But when he says, "I alone," he's saying that I am the whole. There, just as each one of us is. There is just this one. There's no other. There's not self and other. There's me, and then there's the rest of the world. There's my one vote, And then there's all the 100 million or whatever other votes to be cast on for this election. Each vote counts. We see this line in Affirming Faith in Mind, one of the chants that we do most commonly. It goes like this: one thing is all, all things are one. One thing is all. Zen Master Hakuin, whose chant in praise of Zazen we just recited, put it this way: I am the sun and the moon and the stars and the wide, wide earth. This isn't a perspective limited to Zen or Buddhism. The great philosopher Goethe, and poet, said, I have come to the frightening conclusion that I am the decisive element. It is my personal approach that creates the climate. It is my daily mood that makes the weather. I possess tremendous power to make life miserable or joyous. I can be a tool of torture or an instrument of inspiration. I can humiliate or humor, hurt or heal. In all situations, it is my response that decides whether a crisis is escalated or de-escalated, and a person is humanized or dehumanized. I think the word crisis is not an exaggeration of what could possibly come out of this election. We have a presidential candidate who many educated people see as terribly frightening as to what he or she might do once president. There are koans that speak that are particularly apt for this point of view that each one of us is the whole. One of them is number 18 in the Mumonkan, where a monk asks a master, what is Buddha? He's really asking, what is Buddha nature? What is our true self? What is ultimate reality? And the master said, 3 pounds of flax. Every single thing in its particularity is this true mind, this essential nature. He didn't just say, flax. He said, 3 pounds of flax. It's specific. Not just one voter, but Bruce Smith, 2022 Elm Drive. That is this essential nature in its wholeness. To see into this is to feel responsibility, as Goethe was saying, for the whole election. Those who tell themselves, well, I'm just one vote, what would it matter? This shows an attachment to the form side of this twofold reality. For those who are new to this, just very, very briefly, this twofold reality, or this this two sides to our nature, this two sides to reality, is what we can call form on one side and emptiness or differentiation on the other side. The differentiation side, or the what, as I said in the workshop yesterday, the side of phenomena, is what, the only side that most people know. Is they just see the world in terms of thingness, all the many things, physical objects and non-physical phenomena, thoughts and motions and principles and dreams and everything we can, everything that has a name, everything that we can express in words is part of that, the one side of the coin, the side of phenomena, the world of differentiation, of form. But that's only half of reality. The other half is what we could call the side of emptiness or non-differentiation or equality. So to say I'm only my vote, I only have one vote out of millions, is to be caught in just this, the side of form or differentiation or numbers or limits. It's a, the old Buddhist texts would call this attachment to name and form. It's based on thoughts. Even that's a thought. My vote will be only one of millions, so da 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 da. Now, to be fair, this understanding of that each one of us counts for everything, this one vote is all votes, would also be an argument for voting for a third-party candidate. There are many people who argue that if you vote for a third-party candidate, which the polls always show as being very, very low in popularity, that you're wasting your vote, you're throwing away your vote. And the answer from this perspective is, well, but in my one vote, this is everything, and I'm not thinking strategically or in terms of wasting my vote. It's hard to, it cuts both ways, that argument of every single thing is the whole. And then I think back to those 500 and some votes that made the difference in the Florida election that elected George Bush, who then started the Iraq War, who then da-da-da-da-da, when Ralph, some 100,000 votes went to Ralph Nader. Just saying. Second argument that someone might come up with for not to vote is kind of cynicism. Yeah, they're all just in it for themselves. They're all just ambitious and they're all corrupt. This is an argument that's you hear a lot of now in the closing weeks of the campaign. One of the people who, one of the houses on our street where my wife and I live has a yard sign. It looks like any other election yard sign, but instead of having a candidate's name, it says this. It says, "Everybody sucks, so I'm staying home." And there are those who find this attractive. It's a safe place to be. Just, everyone sucks. It's the cynicism then gives you an out. You can just throw up your hands and to say, I'm not going to bother. This is a denial of what we all know to be true, which is that someone's going to win. Someone's going to be declared a winner on Wednesday morning or or later. Who knows? But someone is going to have to be declared the winner. So Zen has a lot of respect for pragmatism over principles. And this cynicism that no one deserves my vote is it's based on idealism. It's not realism, it's idealism. It's an attachment, I would say, attachment to purity, to perfection maybe. It's an attachment to principles. And all of those, purity, principles, idealism, they're all ideas. They're concepts. There's a kind of, there can be a self-serving quality behind this of no one measures up to my standards, so I am just not going to vote at all to maintain my own purity or stature. To those people, I would say, yes, there is no question about it. There is self-interest in every candidate, as there is in all of us. Roshi Kapo used to say, from the point of view of ego, there's only ego. Everything is ego. From the point of view of our true nature, everything is our true nature. Everything is the functioning of our true nature. What Trump and Hillary and Johnson and Stein are all doing is really, in the deepest sense, striving to complete themselves, as we all are. Every one of us, in our own way, is striving to come to self-completion. We're aspiring to be more than we are. We're reaching. And I think in probably most politicians, there's no way to document this, prove it one way or another, but I think in most politicians there is some element of wanting to improve the world. I have to think that. The mix is what's different in different candidates. And you have to wonder whether anyone who runs for president, let me put it this way, from one presidential election to another, I've kind of came to the working conclusion that anyone who can bear up under 12, 14, 16 months of grueling campaigning must have such a craving for power that they don't deserve it. We shouldn't be electing them. Plato said pretty much the same thing. He said, access to power must be confined to those who are not in love with it. And I think you have to say that so far, at least, maybe there'll be some great enlightened politician in the future, but so far, anyone who can survive our presidential election system must be absolutely lusting for power. But wait, what is power? What is the desire for power? At its purest, it is the wish to effect change. That's what power is. It's the ability to effect change. And so there may be many candidates at every level of government who at least tell themselves, there can be a lot of self-deception, but at least who tell themselves and certainly others that they're doing it in order to change the system or to change government or help people. And you can't say that's a lie. But I guess one thing, this is where some discrimination comes into play. Discrimination just means having some critical thinking, pretty much. I think too often discrimination is used instead of prejudice. Prejudice is an awful thing, but discrimination, we need to exercise discrimination all the time. Whenever we approach a traffic light, we have to discriminate between green and red and yellow. That's just normal functioning. And we can do the same with any candidate, is to try to, based on everything we hear over this endless campaign, come to a sense of how much is just pure egomania, and how much is the other side is wanting to change things, wanting to help people and address all of the many problems that we have in our society. One way of us evaluating a candidate is to look at her or his record of service, whether it's to what degree they have based their life on serving and trying to help, and what their record is in effecting help. And to what extent it's just raw ambition. So this argument, everyone sucks, so I'm staying home, is just having your head in the clouds. Wallace Stevens had a very potent poem. He said, "After the final no, there comes a yes. On that yes, the future of our world depends." A third story one may tell oneself, or maybe not, it's not so much telling oneself, but a third reason why people may skip voting on Tuesday is the fear of casting one's vote for the wrong candidate. Fear of voting for the wrong person, making a mistake. There are some of us who are more afflicted by fear of making mistakes, of making the wrong choice. And this is crippling. It can be crippling. But this kind of fear is based on thoughts, dualistic thoughts, thoughts of right and wrong. Is there any pure right? Is there any pure wrong? Back to affirming faith in mind, the chant that we do. There's this line, "If there is a trace of right or wrong, true mind is lost, confused, distraught." And then a fourth reason that someone could come up with for not voting is, I think, the least likely. It'd be a pretty philosophically minded person and it would be a Buddhist for sure, is that it's all empty anyway. You know, whomever we vote for, however we vote, what does it all come down to? Here, going back to the two sides of this reality, this would be also an attachment to the emptiness of things, that things don't matter. Matter, the material, is on the side of form. Change, effecting change, seeing change in this world of phenomena, physical phenomena and other. To tell ourselves it doesn't matter, again, is just one-sided understanding. And ultimately, yes, form is only emptiness. Change is only no change. But what's the other side of that? Emptiness is only form. In Buddhist doctrine, we never can get away with taking one side or the other. So we have in the Prajnaparamita, this is the chant we do most commonly, is we say, form is only emptiness, emptiness only form. Form is no other than emptiness. Emptiness no other than form. How do we integrate these two, the world of form and emptiness, which is, by the way, how things really are? They're not two separate worlds. Form is only emptiness, emptiness only form. And how do we act in a way to integrate those two? Well, we don't think in terms of form and emptiness. We act. We just do it. We don't think it matters, and we don't think it doesn't matter. Maybe we should draw on just a basic civic responsibility. As citizens, we have a responsibility to vote. If that works, go for it. To put it another way, we can vote as though it matters, or in any action. It's not just voting. In anything we do, in anything we decide, you can say, well, yeah, ultimately it's all empty. There's a reality that's beyond change. But then we can still do it, and with the understanding that we're playing a game in a way. We can say that. To say that it's all empty. Here's another articulation of that. In Buddhism, there's this idea of the emptiness of the three wheels. And I don't know where wheels comes from, but anyway, this is what it means, is that the self who is acting, let's say the subject, is fundamentally empty. That is, empty just means without any enduring substance. That this self, or the actor, is just energy in a certain pattern. It's in changing every millisecond. So the self, or the subject who is acting, is empty. The object that is being acted upon is empty. It would have to be. If the self is, then the object is as well. And therefore, the action itself is empty. Subject, object, action, it's all empty. Okay, so now, then what? Once you've come to that conclusion, then what do? You know, you have to eat. You don't have to vote, but you have to eat. And when you eat, you become a little less empty. Except you don't. The other dichotomy here is we could say what is real and what is not real. That's a philosophical trap we never want to get drawn into. And here too, back to affirming faith in mind, says when you assert that things are real, you miss their true reality. But to assert that things are void also misses reality. Either way, so, okay, maybe my vote is ultimately empty, but let's play it out. Let's do it. Because in the world of conventional reality, it does make a difference. And then not to get attached to the result. This is the ultimate test, especially in a real heated election, is to not get attached to winning or losing or T.S. Eliot, the British poet, said it as well as I've ever heard it. He said, "For us, there is only the trying. The rest is none of our business." We make the effort. It's the same in practice. We make the effort without thinking about the result. We're thinking about success or failure. We just make the pure effort for its own sake. It's back to that first argument that mine is only one vote of millions. What does it matter? Could say this would apply also in coming to sittings. It's 6:30 and you're wobbling about whether to come to a sitting here at the center, and you may try to tell yourself, well, I'm just one person, they don't need me, what does that matter? But no, you're everyone. You count. You are the sitting. Come join us. We could use your help. It's such a misunderstanding when people think of things in terms, just in terms of what they're going to get out of coming to a sitting. Well, I can sit at home and I won't have to go to all the trouble of getting there. And it's true, you can sit at home, and we all need to be able to sit at home. That is, we need to not become dependent on sitting at the Zen Center. But when you do come to the center, you're contributing. You're contributing to the sittings here. You're giving. That's a reason to come. Never mind your own self-interest. As Zen practitioners and maybe Buddhists, you don't have to be a Buddhist to be a Zen practitioner, we're faced with these issues that our Asian predecessors from the 8th century and the 12th century and so forth, that they didn't have to face. There was no democracy in China and Japan in ancient time. Most of Zen history has taken place in countries with no democratic system. There was the emperor and his ministers. Everything was top down, and your job was to accommodate yourself to the rule, to the emperor's edicts. But now we have this issue that we all have to face of what our role is and what our relationship is to government and to society. I really hope that everyone will find a way to vote on Tuesday and then afterward let it go. When we vote, each one of us, when we vote, then we've done everything we can. We have. And when you've done everything you can, then you got to let go of the results afterward. You just have to accept that this is how it came out. But until then, don't hold back. Don't cringe. Don't withdraw. Don't sell yourself short. Don't sell your vote short. All right. That's all I've got this morning. We'll stop and recite the four vows. All beings without number,
I bow to the great endless blind actions. I bow to Bhagavad Dharma gaze beyond measure. I bow to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I bow to attain all beings without number. I bow to liberate endless blind passions. I bow to uproot Dharma gaze beyond measure. I bow to penetrate the driven way of Buddha. I bow to attain all beings without number. I bow to liberate endless blind passions. I bow to uproot Dharma gaze beyond measure. I bow to penetrate the direct way of Buddha. I bow to attain.